The following podcast is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, welcome back to True Crime on Easy Street. We're here another week on Easy Street, and I'm Katie Givens, and still not a lawyer.
My name is Scott Wright, and I am still your favorite mediocre journalist.
You are.
Well, at least for the two of you.
Yes. I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor, and I don't plan on ever being one.
Well, so there you go.
Let me just go ahead and put that out there.
We have a Mardi Gras-themed introduction tonight, and I am wearing my big red balls that Kelly gave me. She may have to explain that when she gets home tonight.
No, Kevin caught those in the parade.
Oh, good. So Kevin's already handled my big red balls.
That's a terrible
I'm not
thing.
Sure I want to go there. Already. Yeah, we may have to delete that.
Yeah. So Mardi Gras themed in the studio today. We have beads. We have moon pies. We had
moon pies. I've eaten mine.
I'm holding this for dessert.
Mm-hmm, the original flavor of moon pie.
Which is?
Banana.
Banana is the original flavor?
It is the original flavor.
Okay. I did not know that.
I caught those in a parade. I was in Mobile over the week, last week, with KT. We went down. I had a work conference.
Wondering how you were going to spend that.
Yep. It was okay. A work conference. And we got to watch a parade on Thursday night when we were there. And we caught ramen noodles, moon pies, beads, footballs.
Why are ramen noodles a thing?
I don't know, but it's awesome.
Because they're cheap. You can buy them by the case.
And you know what?
And they don't hurt you if you don't catch them.
Yep. And I have two bags of ramen noodles in my pantry right now that I caught at the parade in Mobile.
What? I don't care what flavor they are, but if you're not going to eat them.
They're chicken and my daughter will definitely eat
them. Okay, never mind.
Mm-hmm. She's like.
Well, she's.
I told her, I caught you two packs of ramen noodles from the parade. And she's like, sweet.
Yeah, that will prepare her for 4 years of college if she's not already prepared. So good for you, Katie.
Colin has a very specific ramen noodle like recipe. Like,
this ought to be good.
His exact cups of water. Like our fridge has that. Like when you pour out water, so we use filtered water, mm-hmm. and it has it measures it as you're putting it out. So he has his exact water amount, mm-hmm. and he puts it in there. He sets that timer, and it's because one time I was like, he was like doing something in the kitchen, and the water started boiling. So I put the noodles in for him. I said, "Hey, put your noodles in," and he was like, "Well, how long ago did you do it?"
Exactly 3 minutes is yes, how much you have to boil
yes,
the noodles.
2 cups of water in 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and then. It's like, I'm like, you just boil them to their salt. And he's like, no, you're messing with my stuff.
You got to hit that sweet spot.
Look, someday he's going to move out of the house and have to feed himself. Let him get this down pat mm-hmm. before he goes. If that's his recipe for ramen noodles.
Down pat.
Yeah.
He puts hot sauce in it sometimes.
I was just about to say that.
He's my hot sauce kid. And sometimes if we have boiled eggs, he slices him a boiled egg and puts it in it. Just
that
like,
is a true ramen bowl. I mean, you go mm-hmm. if we have some order that.
If we have some shredded chicken, he'll throw that in there.
You don't have to worry about him. He will be fine away from home for 4 years.
That's
I mean,
delicious.
He is our one kid also that can turn on the gas stove. I mean, Ellison still cannot. I don't know if anyone was at Jex on the Lake the day that she tried to turn on the gas stove and she broke the knob and it wouldn't turn off and we had to like run home because the eye wouldn't go off. And
you
she
have gas filling your home.
Well, it was on.
Right. Oh, okay.
So it was
okay.
Like, so it was fine because it was all on. She'd got it lit, but she couldn't get it off.
I think I saw this in an episode of MacGyver or Jackass, and it didn't go well in either episode.
Ooh, it was bad. And she still won't really touch this. We've tried to teach her since because at her age, Colin was lighting up the stove. It wasn't a big deal, but mm-mm.
All right. Well, live and learn.
We all have our strengths.
Yeah. I know. And she's usually like the responsible one, not with the stove.
How do we proceed here tonight? I mean, we're going to talk about, do you want to hint at what we're going to talk about tonight before we get into the pre-game show?
No, I want you to just jump on into it. Our Mardi Gras theme. Scott's going to give us our Set the Table segment this week is Mardi Gras.
All right.
Instead
so,
of a year. We chose Mardi Gras because by the time this drops, Today is Ash Wednesday.
That is correct. So I am sitting in this chair on, the day before Fat Tuesday. Yesterday in Mobile, Alabama was the People's Parade, right? And,
yes.
And you were in Mobile last week. You were not there yesterday.
I was in Mobile from Wednesday to Friday.
Okay. So you experienced Mardi Gras Mobile style.
I did.
Over the weekend. And I was there and I was thinking about this. I hadn't thought about it in a really long time until you brought this up. I went to Mardi Gras in Mobile about 30 years ago. And I am 51. So I was about 21 years old. I was old enough to drink. We wouldn't have gone otherwise. But I went with some friends of mine who lived in the Mobile area. And I had a great time, but I got my fill of Mardi Gras that weekend. It was all... the thing that I remember is trying to find a porta potty.
Oh.
I had to pee, and there was nowhere to do that that I could find. That's my lasting memory 30 years later of Mardi Gras in Mobile. But
if you'd been in New Orleans, you just do it on the street because that's what it smells like.
Oh, yeah, no. But we don't do that in Mobile, I was told several times, right. Because I would have... Never mind.
That's why I said New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's a very different.
It's a different in a lot of different ways. And that's a good point. So one of the reasons why Mobile is a staple of Mardi Gras is because Mardi Gras happened in Mobile a long time, like 17 or 18 years before New Orleans was even officially a city. 1703.
Exactly.
Was the first time that there was ever a Mardi Gras in Mobile, Alabama. And it lasted for a long time and was very successful. And then the Civil War came along. And so, especially here in the South, a lot of things changed and a lot of traditions were altered permanently, at least for a little while, until a gentleman named Joseph Stillwell Kane came along. He was born in 1832, but he was an adult by the time that the Civil War was over. He had fought as a Confederate soldier in the Civil War, and he was in Mobile, Alabama, his hometown. In 1866, and he thought, you know what? Screw this. Everybody's moping around. This sucks. Let's do something fun. And so he and several of his friends who were Confederate soldiers, had been, dressed up as a bunch of nefarious characters, got on a decorated charcoal wagon, and had horses drag them through the city streets of Mobile in 1866 and tried to rejuvenate the carnival season in Mobile. Am I getting this right so far?
Sounds right to me.
And so they decided, let's get over this. The miasma is gone. Let's celebrate life again and let's recreate carnival season. And so they dragged themselves through town all over the city of Mobile, and they played songs that didn't make any sense, and they banged on drums, and there was no tune at all. And they actually created a mystic society that was called, and I'm looking at my notes here, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but the character that Joe Kane created for himself was a fictitious Choctaw Indian chief called Slackabamarinico. Does that sound right? You were there last weekend. Did you see that on a sign or scratched into a wall? Yes. Or
I heard the story in a meeting I was in.
Okay. So they decided that we're going to recreate Mardi Gras in Mobile. It had been gone for the duration of the Civil War, but still the oldest ever Mardi Gras celebration in the country, 1703 Mobile. So they got it started up again, and they dressed up and they drove themselves around town, an impromptu parade. And so the end of suffering was declared in Mobile. They're like, we're through moping around about the fact that we've lost the Civil War. We're going to get this going again. Eventually, Joe Kane was able to move the celebration from New Year's Eve, which is the way that it had been celebrated traditionally in Mobile. They moved it to Fat Tuesday to celebrate it later in the or earlier in the year instead of on New Year's Eve. They moved it into the first part of the year. And Fat Tuesday, if you translate the French, that's what Mardi Gras means.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I didn't know that until about 4 hours ago, that the translation of Mardi Gras literally meant Fat Tuesday.
Oh, really?
That just makes me the dumbest person in the room. And that's we already knew that, right? So Fat Tuesday is the day that you gorge yourself before 40 days. You give up your favorite thing. And what are you guys going to I had a very good friend. His name is David Outlaw. Honestly, he is from Fairhope. He always celebrated Mardi Gras in Mobile. He's the person that I went to see Mardi Gras in Mobile with 30 years ago. He always gave up something very important to him for Lent, like red meat, cigarettes, alcohol. Are you guys doing any of that for Lent?
Yes.
You want to go into it?
Well, I'm Methodist, so what we do, I think, is different from Catholics.
Okay.
But not a ton.
Right. I may be wrong on this, and if I am, someone correct me, and I'll make sure I write
the wrong. Yeah, free t-shirt.
Well, I'll write the wrong on our next recording. Okay. But as I understand it, well, for the Methodists, Lent begins on Ash Wednesday, mm-hmm. and it's the 40 days up until Easter, excluding Sundays. So if you give something up, you can have it on Sunday.
Okay.
As I understand it, Catholics, they go hardcore, no Sundays.
Okay.
And they have a few more rules, like there's something to do with like meat on Friday
mm-hmm.
with Catholics. My sister-in-law is Catholic and
yeah, just no meat Fridays. Yeah, you have
so
to
if
do
I get
fish.
This wrong, tell
That's
your
the
sister.
Whole McDonald's filet of fish story. Anyway, go ahead. That's another thing.
That is another thing.
Yeah. That's why McDonald's introduced filet of fish because
Catholics could eat it on Fridays?
Yes.
Wow. That's We're learning all kinds of things here today.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting.
True crime on Easy Street. Yeah. Tell your sister-in-law if we got that wrong to let us know. But yeah. So for me this year, I'm giving up fast foods, but also fried foods.
Okay.
So no eating fast food. No eating fried food.
Like you can't even eat like a healthy, and I'm doing air quotes, a healthy meal at a fried or at a fast food place like a grilled chicken sandwich.
Right, because okay. I consider a fast food place anything with a drive through.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how I define it.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
It's also very inconvenient.
You know, there's no drive through at Easy Street Restaurant, Bar, and Performance Hall, so you can still have the grilled chicken there.
I had chicken there tonight for dinner.
Yeah, she had nothing for you. Did you could have started today. You had nothing bad there.
Yep.
Like nothing against your rules.
Yep.
Katie? Anything?
I hadn't officially chosen mine. I've been going back and forth between some kind of... I always try to do it, like, not too... Because the real purpose of it is to give up something that takes up your time.
Yes.
And to devote that time, you know, to studying the word. And
to
and
yeah, to being a better Christian.
Yes. And so, no, I haven't. I haven't decided, but I may piggyback on Kelly's because I'm really loving that.
It's hard, and I love to swing through that drive-thru mm-hmm. as a convenience thing. But
I remember when you and Kevin did No Bread, and we were in...
Savannah
during that time, it was your birthday mm-hmm. and it was like a Sunday and you were like, oh, bread.
Mm-hmm. I ate up some bread.
Okay.
Because like I said, we're Methodist right. and so we exclude Sundays.
Yeah. All right. I'm not giving up anything. I'm just chugging right along.
Okay.
And speaking of chugging right along. So one thing that Joe Kane did, he founded the Order of Myths, which was a society that he created back in the day. And the you can still see it on the parade on Joe Kane Day today. Their symbol is folly, capital F, folly, chasing death around a broken column, like a broken concrete Corinthian column that symbolizes, some say, the death of the Confederacy. But folly chases death. So there's a float every year on Joe Kane Day where someone dressed as a court jester mm-hmm. chases someone dressed as death in a mask or you know, a skeleton mask and a skeleton type outfit around this column and beats him with balloons that are supposed to look like bloated cattle kidneys, I found out today. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm getting way down in the weeds on this. But that is one of the symbols of the Order of the Myths and one of the things that Joe Kane started back in the day. It's the mythology of the lost cause. Because the lost cause is, don't let death keep you from having a good time while you're here.
Don't let it get you down. Have a good time.
Exactly.
And I'm telling you, the atmosphere in Mobile during the carnival season, during the whole, all the parades, I mean, it's fun. It's lighthearted. The people there are very friendly. It's a really nice time. Mobile is a very clean city. It's a very, it's more family friendly.
I was going to say it's a PG rated city because it's one of the things I read that in New Orleans, if you want beads and you're a lady, there is one requirement that will guarantee that you get beads. But in Mobile, generally, they don't do that.
But I will say that I don't want to just make New Orleans look bad. There are...
I don't think you have to do anything to make New Orleans look bad. But go on.
There are a lot of parades that are family-oriented parades and parades that are directed just for children in New Orleans. So,
and some that are not.
There are a lot that are not. Yeah. But if you go to New Orleans, get the parade schedule. I'm sure it's on an app of some sorts now. And check it out and figure out where those are going to be if you've got a family. Because there's some fun to be had for all. And just like in Mobile, it was a lot of fun. And I look forward to going back. We have that meeting every year during the parade. And it's always the parade that we're there for. It's always the parade set by the Mystic Striper Society.
All right.
And so they have some really cool cups and things that they throw. They glow in the dark. So.
And apparently banana flavored moon pies. Oh, they love it. Because I have one in my hand right now.
So they always do that. And so we're always there when they sponsor the parade. Different crews, different societies sponsor the parade each time. And they do. And they do an incredible job. And we had a great time.
All right. Well, And I will wrap this up and let Kelly get to the crux of the story tonight. So what happened in the mid-60s, 1960s, is that a local author in Mobile, her name was Julia Lee Rayford, she decided that it would be a great idea to honor Joe Kane for the contribution that he made to the fact that the parades the celebration was back in, carnival is the word I'm looking for, was back in Mobile. And so they exhumed his body. They moved it to the Church Street Graveyard, which is the oldest graveyard in Mobile, the way I understand it. They had a big parade, and they had the Joe Kane's widows. They all dress in black. And at the end of this parade, it's a 2-mile-long parade. And when they get to the graveyard, everyone dances on Joe Kane's grave. And the widows all lament that they are his favorite and, oh, we miss him so much. And it's part of the pomp and circumstance of this particular parade. And that started in 1966, and it has continued until this day. And it is the parade that is open to everyone. It is the people's parade. You don't have to be a member of a secret crew or a secret society to participate in the People's Parade, which is held on Joe Crew Day, which is the Sunday before Fat Tuesday, which is yesterday or tomorrow or the day after yesterday, depending on where you're listening to this. And now I've confused myself and I'm done.
Joe Kane Day?
Joe Kane Day, not Joe Crew Day.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I just wanted to clear up these, quote, widows are not, you know, Joe's been dead a long, 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 long time.
He died on April the 17th, 1904.
Yeah, these are not his actual widows. You can participate in it. You can dress up.
Everybody can.
Mm-hmm.
You can show up 5 minutes before the parade starts. They hand you a button and you can walk in the parade. It doesn't cost you a dime. That's what's different about Joe Kane Day as opposed to every other parade at Mardi Gras, anywhere, I'm assuming.
Yes.
At least in Mobile.
Yes, in Mobile. Mm-hmm, for sure.
Right. I'm leaning back and I'm finished now.
Thank you so much, Scott. That it's such a fun season and it's such a fun time and it's one of my favorite times of year. And I love the history surrounding it. And
I love learning it. I didn't know any of this until yesterday.
It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for giving me that assignment. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for that. So what if you think about the Mardi Gras colors, there's green and there's gold and there's purple. And that is going to segue me into today's case because our victim in this case, her favorite color was purple. Today we are going to talk about 3-year-old Camille McKinney, known as Cupcake. Her family and her friends called her Cupcake.
All right.
And she was a 3-year-old from Birmingham, Alabama. On Saturday, October the 12th, 2019, at approximately 8:30 p.m., Camille was abducted from Tom Brown Village public housing community while attending a birthday party there in the parking lot. Other children attending the party told the adults that a man got out of an SUV and put Camille in the vehicle. I'm going to call her Cupcake from here on out.
Yeah,
but that's who I'm talking about.
All right.
The police set up a command post nearby and an Amber Alert is issued about 3.5 hours after the abduction. Sunday, October the 13th, police go door to door in the housing complex, talking with residents, handing out flyers with Cupcake's picture. They also release some surveillance photos of a person of interest in a vehicle that is suspected to be involved, which is a Toyota Sequoia. Cupcake's father does an interview with a local TV station pleading for her release and saying that he would do anything and pay anything to get her back. The Amber Alert was updated with a suspect description. The vehicle is located. We are still on Sunday, October 13th. The vehicle is located outside a Center Point condominium around 8 p.m. The resident there, Richard McGee, noticed the vehicle and talked with another neighbor, and they both concluded that that was the vehicle.
Looks suspicious. We should call somebody.
Yes. So they report the vehicle. Police take the man who owns this vehicle and his girlfriend into custody. They also say that this man was on the surveillance photos as a person of interest. So they are very interested in talking to him. The community holds a prayer vigil for Cupcake. This is going to be the first of several that we see in this time frame. This community really comes together.
And I'm sure the TV networks in Birmingham were probably all there, and it was featured on the local news that night, NBC 13 and all the other channels in Birmingham.
Yes. ABC 3340.
Yeah, Fox 6.
I remember seeing these stories on the news and these prayer vigils.
In this case, happened when?
October. It started. She was abducted October the 12th of 2019.
Okay.
All right. We are now into Monday, October the 14th. Police Chief Patrick Smith and Mayor Randall Woodfin speak at a press conference asking everyone to come forward, or anyone. Everyone and anyone.
Yes.
Come forward.
Please.
With any information, because they still don't know where Cupcake is. A new tip line was established and it was announced during this press conference. On Tuesday, October the 15th, 2019, Governor Kay Ivey and the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office announced a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for Cupcake's disappearance. We also have an additional $1,000 added to that from an unknown citizen. The police announced that the two who were detained on Sunday were charged, but not with Cupcake's disappearance. So while they have these two detained, they discover several things. They've got Patrick, Devon, I think it's Devon or Devone, D-E-V-O-N-E.
I would say Devon.
Devon, yeah. Patrick Devon Stallworth. I'm just going to call him Stallworth from here on out. Age 39, he was charged with 7 crimes.
An outstanding warrant kind of a situation?
No. Possession of child pornography. Possession with intent to distribute child pornography. Things like that.
Okay.
The images were discovered on his phone during the ongoing investigation into the abduction. So when they brought him in and they searched, they found a lot of things. They did not find any evidence that he was responsible for Cupcake's abduction. They also arrested Derek Arisha Brown, age 29. Now, I think it's Derek.
I think so too, yeah, because it's a woman.
It's spelled like Derek.
It only has
one R, so it's D-E-R-I-C-K, so it's Derek Brown. I'll call her Brown. So we have Stallworth and Brown. She's arrested as well. She's held, and authorities file a motion to revoke her bond. In a 2018 case in which Brown is accused of abducting her 3 children from DHR custody. So that charge is not looking good on her record at this moment, because we're looking for who abducted this child. Wednesday, October the 16th, Police Chief Patrick Smith publicly addresses those who may have cupcakes, saying, if you have her and you don't know what to do, I want to talk to you. Just, you know, if you don't know what to do, if you've gotten in too deep, this has gone bad, I just want to talk to you. Just bring the girl. He's pleading for them to just bring her.
Trying to save the girl at this point.
Yes, because as the hours tick and the days go on, hope is, it's just getting.
Sands through the hourglass.
Yes, yes. There were many searches all over the city on Wednesday, October the 16th. A false claim actually comes out that she was found. I actually remember that.
I do
thinking,
too.
Oh, really? They found her.
Okay.
But it was false. Police call in the FBI at some point during this time, but I was very unclear as to when exactly they called it in. But this police force, they were fast. They went straight to action. You know, it sounds like, oh, this Amber Alert was 3.5 hours. That's very fast.
Yeah, I don't have an argument with that. Certainly.
And the fact that they had already set up a headquarters near where she had been abducted.
I mean, how many times have we done stories where the police won't do anything for 24? Back in the day, right? Yes. Back in the day, she's got to be missing for 24 hours before we'll even hit the panic button.
Well, and I don't think they ever had that with a 3-year-old, but...
Well, perhaps not.
But they did, you know... The family looked around, they were trying... But we have kids at the party who were saying... A man came up and put her in his car.
Okay.
You know, so they know immediately that it's bad. So they call in the FBI at some point. Thursday, October the 17th, Brown is released from jail after posting $500,000 bond, and she is appointed Emory Anthony as an attorney. Her boyfriend, Stallworth, ends up staying in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brown says that there is an alibi for the night of the abduction, that she does not know Camille. She does not know the family. She doesn't know any of these people. That's her story, and she's sticking to it. Police release a surveillance video showing two children playing right before the abduction. The video shows two different men, one who walks by and the other who stops and talks with the children. And then the children then follow him out of camera view. I've watched this footage.
Okay.
You can see them play.
So is it in someone's backyard?
It's in the parking lot of this community housing.
Okay.
Saturday, October the 19th, another prayer vigil is held for Cupcake at a local church near the housing complex. Sunday, October 20th, a search begins around 1 p.m. in the east area of Birmingham that covered a 2-mile stretch. The search was completed at 5:30 p.m. with no results. So they obviously got some sort of tip that they were looking at. They searched from 1 to about 5:30. It yields nothing. On Tuesday, October the 22nd, 2019, they call the family to police headquarters around 7 p.m. to sadly let them know that Camille's body has been recovered. They found her in a Santec dumpster that had been parked near the Center Point apartment complex where Stallworth was initially arrested and the vehicle was found. The dumpster had been transported to a landfill near Warrior, Alabama, and that's where her body was recovered. So, thrown in the trash of that apartment complex. Just like garbage. Treated her just like garbage.
A three-year-old child.
Little girl who was just trying to play at a birthday party, and they called her Cupcake. And her favorite color was purple. This is about her.
Yeah.
This is not about this
yes,
whatever you want to
absolutely
call it. Terrible, terrible person. But also a very dumb criminal. Can I say that?
Sure.
Yeah. Dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You're on surveillance, they've released it. There's your car, and then you use the dumpster of the apartment complex where you live. So person of interest, car of interest, and body All right there.
All right in the same parking lot. And I don't want to jump the tracks here, but are we going to get to some sort of motivation for why this took place? Is this an angry old boyfriend or?
I don't think we're going to be able to clear any of that up for you. Really? I think this is just a horrible couple of people, but you know, okay. Katie can get to that.
Okay.
Wednesday, okay. October the 23rd, they do an autopsy and it is confirmed to be Cupcake. Birmingham City Hall was lit up with purple lights that night in honor of her. You can see the picture online. It's all purple. And the mayor made a speech. More than 800 people, 800 people attend Cupcake's funeral at New Beginnings Christian Ministry, with over 400 more in overflow. That's how many people. That's this community came together.
Yeah.
The mayor made an incredible speech about her, about how it's important to say her name, to remember her, and it's, you know, and with City Hall being lit up, and this community was devastated about this, and this child was mourned greatly.
Well, just so senseless.
I mean, she should have been.
Yes, of course.
Yep. What a sweet little being. Police later say that she died by asphyxiation by suffocation. Her autopsy showed toxic levels of methamphetamine and trazodone in her system, to the point of she wasn't exposed to this, like around someone smoking meth or something.
Right.
She ingested it. So they gave her methamphetamine and trazodone.
Trazodone being?
It is a narcotic.
Yeah, it's a sedative.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm going to stop and let Katie take it from here.
So we've got Stallworth and Brown in custody. Brown, like we said, she was let out on bond. But in July 2020, they are both federally indicted and arraigned 1 month later. So she's picked back up. Stallworth was in custody this whole time. They're federally indicted on federal kidnapping charges. And kidnapping prosecutes a federal crime now. It requires proof that the defendant seized, confined, abducted, or carried away someone and either held them for ransom or simply moved them against their will from one place to another. And obviously that's what happened in this case. Mm-hmm. And so there's federal charges here. There are also state charges they're indicted on that consist of capital murder during a kidnapping and capital murder of a child under the age of 14. Those federal charges, like I said, were brought on July of 2020. The U.S. Attorney General has still not said if they're going to go after the death penalty in these federal charges. But in all honesty, the state case will probably happen before the federal case. In December of 2020, the grand jury delivered charges for the state. So this is almost a whole year after this. I mean, it's more than a whole year after this crime's taken place that we're even getting state charges.
Do you think that has to do with COVID?
I think it has everything to do with COVID. And I'm going to kind of go into that a little bit because it sounds insane. This family has been sitting around for a year waiting on these people to even be indicted on the murder of this girl. Because up until this point, and still, you know, 7, 8, 9 months later was the first time they were even indicted on the kidnapping charges.
Mm-hmm.
And it took another 6 months to get them indicted on the murder charges. And they were due for a pretrial hearing on March 31st, 2021. To my knowledge, I can't find much to do with this pretrial hearing on the internet. There was a gag order put in place on this case. And we're not going to go into it here because she was a 3-year-old little girl. But due to the nature of this case, there's a gag order put on. And so you don't find much about this in the news. They don't talk about what happened to her, really. They don't talk about the ins and outs of the case. They were due again in circuit court in Jefferson County in February of 2022, which, as we're recording this is the last day of February 2022.
Right.
And I could find no news on this trial. On this hearing.
Well, then this may be something that we can give an update on, at least the legal proceedings in the next few weeks, because if they stick to that schedule, like you said, Katie, it's the last day of February. So maybe in the next week or two or three, we can give some sort of update about how this is progressing.
Well, and this is a jury trial.
Okay.
If, you know, if they don't plead out on it. And as of now, like, they've pled not guilty in the federal courts. So I'm assuming they're pleading not guilty in the state charges too. And because you can't really plead guilty to murder if you're not pleading guilty to the kidnapping, which led to you having, you know,
right,
possession of the child that is murdered.
I think at this point, when you read statements that the two of them have made, they're both just blaming each other.
Yes. Absolutely.
Really? Mm-hmm. Is that it? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it. He did it. I didn't want to do it. She did it.
I didn't have anything to do with this. She right. did.
He says he came home and found her with this little girl, and he's like, that's not your kid. And then the next thing he knows, he sees on the news that the kid's dead. And she's saying she came home and worse things happened.
Well, he is on the surveillance video that they released as a person of interest. He's the one who owned the vehicle that was identified as being the vehicle. I think it's going to be hard. I guess he's just trying to say she had his vehicle. I think it's really going to be hard for him to say that he was not involved.
Yeah.
I don't know what all evidence they have. I know there was an autopsy mm-hmm. performed, and I don't know the nature of all the DNA evidence. I'm not going to speculate, again, because this is a three-year-old child.
Certainly.
So, but all of that will come out in court. And if you take COVID out of the mix, we'd probably already have the ending to this.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of bumps in the judicial system that have taken place over the last 2 years that reverberate through the judicial system for the next several years because of the lockdown and a lot of the way that our court system works because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. And not just Cupcake's family had to suffer through this because of COVID. A lot of families had to suffer because of the delay
right. in
the court system. And it just couldn't help it. I mean, there was nothing I could do at that point. But if you look at this case and you look at the way that it happened, and we all can remember watching it on television and seeing the search unfold on television, and daily they were coming out with something, another vigil, another plea, another search, surveillance footage, anything. I think the police in this case did everything that they could. I think the city did everything that they could.
Well, unfortunately, the police department in Birmingham, Alabama is well versed in dealing with murder.
They are.
Well, talking about evidence, the only evidence I have note of was that investigators found a mixture of Cupcake's blood and DNA on a mattress at the apartment the suspects were staying in when they were arrested.
That sounds incriminating.
It's very incriminating.
But back to how did COVID impact criminal cases, I've done a little bit of, and I know firsthand just because I saw how it did here at the office. They only have jury trials 2, maybe 3 times a year. If you get a trial pushed out, it's going to be another 4 or 6
yeah,
months.
You're talking about a grand jury proceeding kind of
a
thing?
Yeah, that's, or just even a jury trial. Like if, okay. like if you have to have a jury trial moved, it's not like, oh, we'll do it again next month or we'll do it again the next month.
Is it easier in a big city or is it just as complicated?
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
I would assume it's the same.
Yeah, okay.
But
I don't know.
But I'm just saying, like, I didn't do any research on it. I don't know. But I know here in Cherokee County, like, Shane's got a jury trial coming up in March. And, like, the next jury trial would be in September.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm, you know, getting time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's the big quote, justice delayed is justice denied.
Mm-hmm.
And so for defendants sitting behind bars awaiting justice, significant constitutional rights are at stake. I mean, and I'm going to go through a little bit of that, but even those who were released pre-trial have unsolved charges. Victims, you know, they feel the impact of this because they're not seeing justice against, you know, their perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
During a public health emergency, the courts need to balance the constitutional rights of defendants while protecting the health of judges, court staff, attorneys, and jurors. I mean, you have to do what you have to do. And during this, most court operations, like, they followed the same paths. They prioritized critical cases and the use of remote justice. Examples of critical cases included hearing initial criminal matters, such as arraignments and bail hearings, as well as restraining order requests, but those are not jury trials. Mm-hmm. That's like initial things. They're Courts eventually reopened, you know, once we got, you know, through the thing.
We're getting back in that general direction.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of running full swing right now, at least around here. I mean, even like in New York, I mean, they just had the big Ghislaine Maxwell trial and it was full swing. But so when the courts reopened, but the backlog of criminal hearings and trials was enormous. I mean, I know that Shane and them, and it was crazy trying to catch up. So, I mean, and courts have been said that they have said that it could take months up to years to get through the backlog.
Oh yeah, that sounds totally plausible to me. I mean, it really, I mean, the court system shut down for a good solid, I don't want to say a year and a half quite.
It was probably shut down for a good 6-8 months, which is still a long time. But then
started to ramp back up slowly for another 6 or 8 months. Here we are.
And then you had to start, you know, with your oldest case, like moving through. Yeah,
because you're trying to apply the Constitution of the United States and give people a speedy trial before a jury of their peers. But like Katie just said, you know, when you have two sequences of that here in Cherokee County, where you have jury trials, it takes a while to get caught back up. And one of the sequence, and I know from talking to probate judge Tim Burgess, one of the good things that happened to the county is that when COVID happened, crime slowed way down. They went from having a really big problem with too many inmates in the county jail to not having very many at all in the county jail. And that was a huge budget deficit. And there's a story about this in the Cherokee County Herald last week, and I didn't mean to plug my own newspaper, but we did have that story. But that's one of the things that happened is that there were a lot fewer inmates in the jail. And so this huge budget deficit that the county was having to borrow money from the highway department and borrow money from other departments to pay for went away. Yeah. And that's starting to ramp back up again. And I didn't mean to step on Katie's story, but that's happening here in Cherokee County.
I was going to say, in our case, we're just waiting for justice for Cupcake. And we haven't gotten there yet.
No.
But I think we're going to get there.
Yeah.
And so that's
we're
currently waiting on justice for Cupcake and her family. And hopefully we'll be able to update you on that as the courts continue to catch up from their hiatus and from their shutdown.
Katie was very correct about that quote that she made earlier about justice delayed is justice denied. But I think this is going to be a case where justice will be delayed, but justice will finally be administered.
As far as anybody knowing the family, it would seem that these were two complete strangers of this little girl and her family. They did not know.
Okay. That was my first question.
They did not know. If they did know who these people are, I can't find anything about it. It was a random, it was a chance.
It's not some retribution for some past indiscretion.
It was
completely random.
Seems, and with the other charges that he has, child pornography, possession to distribute, he saw this little girl and he went after her.
Right.
And that's, he saw an opportunity and he took it.
But unfortunately, and I hope that this isn't the case with this, but unfortunately, all these problems with COVID and the court system really seem to be in, except for the fact that criminals are staying in jail longer without trial. When they're rightfully there, that's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But there are several, like...
That's a good point.
There are several rights there that are... Okay, so... First, we've got the Sixth Amendment, the right to a speedy trial. But when that's broken, you get a lot of other rights that are messed up. So you get like right to the assistance of counsel. And I'm going to go through this because these are all things that people can use in an appeal process.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get convicted of this crime, and of course, everyone appeals in this sort of situation, these are things that can actually benefit the criminal.
Mm,
okay. So right to the assistance of counsel.
Even if they are convicted initially. Yes.
Right to the assistance of counsel. So like, we'll see a defendant's appealing their cases based on ineffective assistance of counsel, because a lot of times in these COVID situations, they haven't really met with their attorneys. They're doing a lot of Zoom conferences with their attorneys. They're doing a lot of, you know, over the phone situations, and they're not meeting with them face to face. And so you're seeing a lot of that being brought up, like, well, we didn't really go over our case well enough because we didn't know each other.
And you never know what judge you're going to get. Some judge may go, you know what, you're right. You didn't have effective counsel because you had to talk to him on the phone or you had to see him on a computer screen. I'm assuming that's going to change as we go forward, but
hopefully. How do you think that's going to affect these cases, Katie? Do you think the judge is going to say, you were on a Zoom meeting face to face. That's the same thing. That was the best we had to offer. We couldn't offer you anything else. You got what everybody else got.
Or the other way.
Or is it going to be
ineffective?
Correct.
I don't know. I think there'll be a precedent set. And once there's a precedent set, that'll be what's followed. Yeah.
And I hope that it's one that provides justice and fairness. I know in our case, we're not wanting to give these individuals the opportunity to appeal and certainly get less time or get a less sentence. Mm-hmm. I just find it very hard to believe, even with the small bit of evidence that you have talked about, was still a lot.
Right.
So I find it hard to believe that these two individuals will be able to do that, but you never know.
Well, and then there's like right to an impartial jury. There's an argument that jury selection being done virtually could make it difficult to assess a potential juror's credibility. And they're like saying that. And then in this case, like today, we have a more limited jury pool, or especially during the height of COVID, because essential workers were getting out, people who happened to caregive for their family members.
It's harder to gather a jury of your peers.
Mm-hmm. And then another one is the right to confront their accuser. So with like mask situations and, you know,
I hadn't even thought of that.
Everybody not being able to come to court, some people being immunocompromised and this, that, and another. You know, when someone accuses you of a crime, not in this situation because the accuser is deceased.
I was going to say, what do you do when we've had a funeral for the accuser and 800 plus people showed up?
Yeah.
Because she was 3 years old and you took her life. Again, I understand that everybody gets a fair trial. But so how would they use masks as a problem there, Katie?
To me, this is all BS. Okay. But this is a big thing. Like Nolo has like gone and done research on it and predicting like these problems that could arise in the future due to COVID and these court cases. And they think we're going to see a lot more appeals based on these trials that happened during COVID time.
I'm pretty sure BS is not a legal term, but I totally agree with everything Katie said. I mean, there's going to be a lot of things that get thrown. If you're a defense attorney and you're trying to get your client off, especially if they're on death row, I mean, we've all done enough death row cases since we've been on this show to know that they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you.
These two could be up for the death penalty.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to try everything they can. And that's their job.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
If there is a shadow of a doubt.
Right.
That's what the Constitution says. We all get a free crack at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, this is going to be crazy for the next year or two or three.
Based on what the two of them have been saying.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if she were able to get a little more leniency, Brown, than Stallworth, the man in the case.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because he owned the vehicle, it was his apartment, I believe.
Yes, I think, she was just living there with him. And
she's his girlfriend.
And his history that you mentioned
and
a couple of times.
And the things they found on his phone. And
Them talking about the DNA found. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that's his. That's not been said anywhere, but.
Right. They're being very hush-hush, as they should be with this. We're trying to be as discreet as possible and delicate as possible. But we also need to let people know what happened. Mm-hmm. We need to say her name, as the mayor said, Camille Cupcake.
Cupcake.
Exactly. And we need to make sure that people don't forget what this little girl went through. But at the same time, we also need to remember how she brought a community together, and I would rather have her back playing
Certainly.
And not bring a community together and alive and well.
Exactly.
At the age of 6 or 7, however old she would be now.
Exactly.
Starting first grade.
Mm-hmm. But this community rallied around this family and rallied around this police department, and hopefully we're going to see justice and it's going to stick and there's not going to be this appeal process that's going to get all janky and make us feel dirty and like someone got away with something.
Yeah, I hope it's not our 20th anniversary episode when we finally tell somebody that justice was served, or tell our listeners that justice was served in this case, because that would be atrocious.
Right. This week on our social media, we'll have pictures of Cupcake. I'm not going to put their pictures out there. You can find these individuals.
Yeah, do your own research.
Yeah, and see them. But we're going to put pictures of Cupcake. I'm going to have some purple on there and things too on our Instagram page in honor of her. I also want to give a shout out to my son, Nate Turner. This case was requested by him when Cupcake was missing. He watched the news every night.
Really?
He was very invested. He just kept telling me, "Mom, I just know they're going to find her." And he said, every night he'd say, I prayed for Cupcake, Mom, I did. And it just broke his little heart when he, you know, found out that she had been murdered. And he requested we do this. He was very happy that we were. He thinks of her all the time. So just know that he is her champion out there.
I have definitely talked to Nate Turner about Cupcake, and you got to listen to one episode, Nate. You can't listen to them all.
Exactly. This one is okay for you, Nate Turner, but some of the others, you know, you can't listen to because, you know, Mr. Scott says bad
words. I'm so glad I didn't swear tonight.
Thank you, Nate, for the suggestion.
Well, that was enough.
I know. Well, thanks, guys, for joining us this week. And we will be live this week.
We are live.
If you listen to this at the exact right moment in time, you have just enough time to jump into the shower and run a comb through your hair and get to Easy Street Restaurant Bar and Performance Hall by 7:30 tonight, because we will be doing something on the live stage. We don't know what it is yet. We're going to talk about that when we get off the air.
Exactly. It'll be Ash Wednesday, but I think most Ash Wednesday services start at 6 o'clock, so you'll be able to join us at 7:30.
Plenty of time.
Exactly.
Come with your ashes. We'll see you.
Don't forget to like us and love us and give us a 5-star rating. Otherwise, keep it to yourself. We're on Twitter now. We're on TrueCrimeOnEasyStreet.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And some other things. Somebody jump in.
You can listen to us, of course, on your favorite, whatever you're listening to us on now. But we also are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and Google Podcast.
Yes.
Merch.
On our website. Check it out.
$20. Good night, everybody.